It's Light the Tower.
Say goodnight to this one.
Your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Light it up on a Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. We have lost our way today. It's one of those days. Craig is in Omaha right now. He's doing some logistical things, getting set up. He will be back with us tomorrow. I am Jeff Howe. I am actually not in the Horn studios. I'm at the Fairmont Hotel, downtown Austin. Big day for us down here today. We've got Derek Cohen, Trevor Hines, the Horn staff. We're all down here. Thrilled to be partnering with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area for the 2021 Great Future Summer Luncheon. Texas head football coach Steve Sarkisian is the keynote speaker. Roger Wallace, who you hear Roger on the Horn doing baseball with Craig. You also hear him on the Longhorn IMG Radio Network from Learfield IMG College doing Longhorn football as Craig's color analyst. Roger steps in and does some men's basketball, some women's basketball. Roger will be the MC for this event today, and we are here broadcasting live. It feels so good to be on remote. I was talking to Derek before we jumped on yesterday. Triple Option boys, they were in Killeen yesterday. Thankfully, BK made it there without running out of gas. And if he would have just called me, I would have told him, look, man, you either need to get gas in Florence or you might be in trouble trying to make it all the way to Killeen because there's just not a lot in between on 195. But he made it. But they were out yesterday. This is the first time this show has been on remote since we launched on March 4th of last year. And no, doing the show via Zoom doesn't count from my house during an ice storm. So we're thrilled to be out. I was just talking to some folks for the Boys and Girls Club. This is one of the kind of the first as we get back into doing, you know, luncheons and things of that nature. This is one of the first big ones. So it's good to be getting back to normal. So I am down here at the Fairmont. We'll be doing the show from here. Specs text line is wide open, as always, 337-3776. And we've got our usual fare. We've got two Longhorn Notebook segments. We've got Inconceivable. And any contribution is always welcome from our man behind the glass who is back at the Horn Studios making sure we stay on the air. He is the publisher, curator, otherwise major domo of Flex ATX. FlexATX.com, Thursday Night Flex, at FLXATX on Twitter and Instagram. Snoop Daniel. Snoop, I'm sorry you have to be by yourself. Is it lonely in the studio today?
Very lonely, but it sounds so cool out there. I love live action remotes where you can hear the ambiance and things going on behind you, and it sounds, it's radio gold. I love it.
I didn't know if you needed like Zay to hang out and just, you know, be in the studio just to give you like some person-to-person interaction there instead of just staring at the board all day.
Nah, this is lit. I hear people chanting in the background. What is that?
Yeah, we've got Boys and Girls Club. We've got some cheerleaders out here, so it's lively out here. Everybody's having a good time. Definitely looking forward to the luncheon today with Sark as the keynote speaker. Again, to Roger Wallace as the MC. We will be out here all day during the duration of the show. We are going to talk about Sark today. I do want to talk about Sark in one of our Longhorn Notebook segments, as a matter of fact, coming up at the bottom of the hour, because Dennis Dodd at CBS Sports has done kind of something that we've all talked about, which is this Nick Saban career coaching car wash where guys kind of go there to get revived, you know, maybe got fired from a job, need to remake yourself. And it's not the traditional coaching tree, and that's something I want to get into because this ended up being a really big topic on the Longhorn Blitz podcast this week with myself, Matt Butler, and Rod Babers, which, by the way, you can get anywhere you get your podcast. Just search Horns 24/7. Click the subscribe button and get every episode of Longhorn Blitz when it drops on Tuesday mornings. But this is something we talked about on the Blitz, and I think we need to start looking at Sark's time at Alabama in a different light and not like we would look at it from a traditional assistant coach leaving a coaching tree to go somewhere else. But we'll get to all that coming up in the Notebook segment. We've got to talk Longhorn baseball, also some stuff we didn't get to yesterday. The Longhorns left for Omaha yesterday. They'll have a workout today. They'll have a workout at TD Ameritrade tomorrow. Of course, David Pierce yesterday on the Zoom call with us. said they weren't ready to name a starter yet. He did indicate that he and Sean Allen kind of knew where they were going in terms of who was going to start the Mississippi State game. And really, any of those three starters would be good options because they all bring different things to the table. Ty Madden's your ace. Do you just continue to ride that horse? You've got Tristan Stevens, who, you know, Mississippi State is one of the faster teams in the SEC that can cause you some issues on the base path. He does the best job of any of those guys in the starting rotation of holding runners. And then you've got Pete Hansen. When you're facing a good fastball-hitting team like Mississippi State, a team that hunts fastballs, would you rather go with the lefty who can really kill you with the off-speed stuff, maybe give you a little deception? So really, obviously not a bad option for David Pierce and Sean Allen as they get ready to attack this. But David Pierce will be available to the media via Zoom tomorrow from Omaha. So probably then, I would think, we'll have our answer on who's going to start that game for Texas on Sunday against Mississippi State. 5:45 pregame, 6 o'clock first pitch. You can hear that game here on the Horn. And if it's going to be broadcast on ESPN2, and with all due respect to Chris Burke and Kyle Peterson, there's some great analysts on ESPN, on the ESPN networks, but if you're not watching the game and turning on the Horn and turning the TV volume down and cranking up Craig and Roger, then you're just doing life wrong anyway. So make sure you're listening to the Horn on Sunday. But right now, we've got to talk about the news of the day, and we'll re-rack this a couple of times here from the Fairmont Hotel as we get ready for the Boys and Girls Club summer luncheon here. As I was driving in, got the news that Reuben Owens, the running back from El Campo, the number one ranked running back prospect in the state for the class of 2023, is decommitted from Texas. His dad did talk to Steve Wiltfong, our national director of recruiting at 24/7 Sports. This is Reuben Owens' father. Quote, "We're just going to open it up and make sure we're making the right choice for him and making sure he's making the right choice." Reuben Owens, the number two ranked running back prospect in the country and the number 24 ranked prospect overall in the class of 2023. Texas is the leader. That's what the family told 24/7 Sports this morning. Alabama, Texas A&M, Georgia also in the mix there. They'll visit USC coming up on the 21st of this month. Reuben Owens just recently made visits to both Alabama and LSU, Ohio State, and Oklahoma still in the picture. You know, Texas A&M is kind of the school that's gotten the most buzz of late. But I think overall there's a couple different ways you can look at this. I think one, you can look at this and say, you know, there's really no good way to spin this if you're Texas. Losing a commitment, especially losing a commitment from a guy that's as highly rated as Reuben Owens and is as good of a prospect as Reuben Owens, that's never a good thing. But I do think, and I'm not going to say it's positive because, it's not positive, but what makes this different from a normal decommitment is you've got to understand how much the landscape has changed for 2023 prospects in a matter of weeks. I mean, Reuben Owens committed back in February. We were still knee-deep in the dead period. We didn't know when the dead period was going to be over. He commits to Texas. Stan Drayton, Brandon Harris, a couple members on the staff have done a really good job recruiting him. And there's a reason why Texas is still considered the leader in this recruitment. But now that we're beyond the dead period, once we hit June 1st and recruits were allowed to go visit campus, and keep in mind, this was a group of 23 recruits. They couldn't go even take unofficial visits to games last year. So they're getting out for the first time in their recruitments, and they're seeing all these different places, experiencing all these different things. They've got unofficials for games coming up in the fall. They're going to have the junior day process. That's going to be coming up next winter, early next spring. Then you've got official visits. So in the recruitment of Reuben Owens, you've got a really long way to go, and he's seeing stuff. He and the other 2023 prospects, you're seeing stuff they haven't seen before, seeing campuses for the first time. And I don't think this is an indictment in any way, shape, or form on Steve Sarkisian and the Texas coaching staff. I think this is just a byproduct of the world in recruiting, especially for guys going into their junior seasons. It has drastically changed. It has been turned on its ear in a matter of weeks. Now, one topic of discussion that's popped up, I know it's popped up on the flagship message board at Hornets 24/7. Are you worried about momentum with recruiting? You know, because you look at the last couple of commitments Texas has gotten, even in the 22 class, right? Like, they've added a deep snapper, they've added a kicker, Will Stone, the local product from Regents. you lose your top commitment right now in the 2023 class. Are you worried about momentum? Well, no, not really, because if you look at where Texas sits, like, let's take our national recruiting rankings of 24/7 Sports, Texas still has the number 7 overall class in the country. You got Malik Murphy, who's you got your quarterback. He's a top 75 prospect. Brian Allen Jr., the safety from Aledo, is a top 100 prospect. Jaden Blue from Klein Kane, even though he's opted out for his senior year of high school, he's still a borderline top 100 guy. And before the decommitment, was everybody's number one ranked running back prospect in the country. You know, they were able to halt some momentum that was maybe going the other way with Jalen Gilbo, the corner out of Port Arthur Memorial. Same thing with Christopher Ross from North Shore. So it's going to be interesting. They've got to do some, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if they can hang on to momentum as we've got a drum line going on behind us.
You're doing good, Jeff.
Yeah.
We can hear you loud and clear.
So it's going to be interesting to see what they do in terms of being able to – Snoop, can you hear me at all right now?
Actually, because you're talking into the microphone, even though it's a blaring band, we can still hear you loud and clear. So just
– okay.
It might not sound like it to you, but we can. I remember doing, like, remotes like this at games. I'm like, it's a madhouse around me. You can actually hear me? And, yeah, we can. So you're good.
Okay, I got you. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of work on the part of the Texas staff. And they knew their commits, let alone their targets, they knew their commits were going to get out and take some visits. And they've done a pretty good job of keeping what they've got in the fold in the 22 class. And they even added a guy. I mean, I don't think we've talked enough about this Anthony Jones commitment. He's a three-star athlete out of Las Vegas, but a guy 6'5", 242 that Pete Kwiatkowski has sold twice. He was committed to Washington at one point, and Pete Kwiatkowski's had to sell him twice now on, you know, as a two-way prospect, a guy that's got some tight end upside, coming to play defense for Texas. And we know that hybrid defensive and outside linebacker positions, that was a huge point of emphasis for Steve Sarkisian and the staff when this recruiting cycle started. I remember Sark even saying on signing day, now, you need to get your quarterback, you got to get your skill guys, etc. But he made it a point to say, hey, that's a position where they've got to go into the 22 cycle and win some recruiting battles, and Anthony Jones being one of those battles. So I don't think from that standpoint they've got to worry about momentum. I think if you're a Texas fan, and maybe I've just still got some of that PTSD left over from the way the Mack Brown era ended, but the worst thing you can do if you're Steve Sarkisian, and I don't think this staff will do that. They don't strike me as the kind of staff that will do that, is trying to manufacture momentum and sometimes taking commitments just for the sake of taking commitments. Like, you can go back and look at some of Mack Brown's last few recruiting classes, especially like that 2014 class, and then some of the early commitments they got for 2015, that when Charlie Strong and that staff got in and started evaluating some of those guys, they sat down and started watching tape and realized, oh, man, three or four guys committed to this program right now that probably can't play here. So that's the worst thing you can do, is just start taking commitments from recruits just for the sake of manufacturing momentum. This recruiting cycle, unlike any other, every recruiting cycle has ebbs and flows. Every recruiting cycle has waves that you're going to ride. And this one is going to be wilder than any other, because we're through the dead period and now we're back on the normal recruiting calendar, which is kind of weird because we're going to get through this really hectic period in the month of June, and then we're going to come back in July and go right back into a dead period again. And again, once we get to the fall, we'll be back on the normal recruiting calendar. And as those dates pop up, we'll let you know and we'll keep you updated. Those of you that don't follow recruiting regularly and aren't into it minute by minute and following guys like Mike Roach and what Mike's doing, reporting it at Horns 24/7. But, you know, we're gonna get back into the normal recruiting calendar. So this, you know, kind of that sugar high, I call it, from making visits, that's going to settle down for guys at some point, and this will kind of even out, and then you'll be back on the plane. And then it's up to Sark and the staff to make sure the bottom line is right in the fall and make sure they're winning games. And that's another big part of it. But I think for right now, again, it's not good when you lose a commitment from the number two ranked running back prospect in the country. But at the same time, we are dealing with a very, very, very different set of circumstances than we were just a few weeks ago on the recruiting trail. CB texting in on the Specs text line, 337-3776. CB, want to know, where was I 27 years ago today when the white Bronco captivated the world? Derek Cohen sitting right here next to me, part of the horn staff. Derek, you remember where you were for the Bronco chase?
I don't think I was born yet.
Wow. Yeah, I think I was going to, like, Little League baseball practice maybe when all that was going on. I remember being on a baseball field and then coming back and glued to the TV. So, yeah, it's crazy to think that it was 27 years ago. You know, ESPN did a really interesting 30 for 30. It was in the first group of 30 films that they produced for that series. And it was just called June 17th, 1994, because there was so much that happened that day in the sports world. So, you had the O.J. thing going on. Arnold Palmer played his last U.S. Open. You had, before the baseball strike, you had an incredible home run chase going on, where I think Ken Griffey Jr. was at 30 home runs by the time you got to June 17th, just an absurd number. You had the NBA Finals going on. You had the New York Rangers celebrating the Stanley Cup. All that stuff was going on the same date. And what's cool about that 30 for 30 is it's not narrated. So it's just like B-roll and news clips and background music. There's no narration. So it's a really different take. Anybody that hasn't seen it, I'd encourage you to go ahead and check that out. But, yeah, CB, I think I was going to Little League baseball practice when all that was going down. Another text are coming in saying those decommitments are going to happen to everybody, even the top schools. Like Georgia's dealing with it right now. You're going to see it happen across the country right now. Again, at the risk of repeating myself, you're just dealing with an entirely different set of circumstances. But all of this will settle at some point. That tidal wave, everything will calm down, I think, once we get to August and readjust to the recruiting calendar. And, the schools that typically recruit really well are going to recruit really well. And history tells you, again, even though it's so unique right now, Steve Sarkisian's first cycle compared to any other Texas head coach, what they've had to deal with, they haven't had to deal with this extended dead period and all the other things that Sark has had to deal with. On top of the fact that, you know, I don't think this gets talked about enough when you're talking about the visit process. I know some Texas fans have been critical of like, the picture setups at A&M and other places look better. Well, part of that is Texas doesn't have an actual, like, legit facility to host recruits in yet because the South End Zone's still being finished. And when that thing gets finished and guys can come back for games and they can see the finished product, every recruit's family that our guys at Horns 24/7 have talked to, just conceptually, like, wow, it looks really impressive. I can't wait to come back to see it. And I think when you're talking about 2022 recruits that aren't in the boat yet, you're talking about the next cycle down the road, which is the class of 2023. The way I've always viewed official visits and viewed trying to win a recruitment, can you get them on campus? And yes, can you show them a good time? Can they have fun? Can they connect with people? Can you give them a valid reason to want to come back? And if you're a Texas recruit right now, you've got a lot of valid reasons to come back. Number one, you want to see what this on-field product looks like once toe meets pigskin on September 4th and Texas plays Louisiana. And by the way, bring your water and your sunscreen for a 3 o'clock kickoff at DKR in early September. But people want to see the on-field product. And the second part of that is the recruits, they want to see what this facility looks like. They want to see the finished product. So you've got a lot of valid reasons if you're a recruit to want to come back to Texas in the fall. And, again, it's for this staff as you try to stat. And we went over it the other day when we were talking. And, again, we had a couple people texting. If you missed it, Reuben Owens, the 2023 running back from El Campo, the number 2 ranked running back prospect in the country, according to the 24/7 Sports composite rankings, decommitted from Texas this morning. We talked about this the other day when we talked about Bud Elliott's blue chip ratio and kind of the minimum threshold to win a national championship, at least in the last 10 to 15 years, has been you have to have more than 50% of your roster has to consist of guys who are 4- and 5-star prospects. And the only two schools that have come close to busting that theory, Oregon with Marcus Mariota, special quarterback, special circumstance, great fit in an offense, and Deshaun Watson at Clemson. Again, special quarterback, special team, unique circumstances there. But you know, whether it's Alabama or Ohio State, you know, whoever your national champion has been, Clemson more recently, they've done it with far more 4- and 5-star prospects than they've done with 3- and 2-star prospects. And how you get to that is, yes, Tom Herman had two really good recruiting classes in 2018 and 2019. And we've talked about the attrition with those classes. But the challenge is, you can have one great class. You can even have two great classes. But when you look at what Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia, Clemson's starting to do, they're stacking that caliber of class on top of the next one, on top of the next one, on top of the next one, on top of the next one. And as Steve Sarkisian builds this program, yes, you need to win, but you also need to stack those recruiting classes. And the way you do that is you've got to, again, give recruits valid reasons to want to come back to your campus, keep yourself in the race as long as possible, and then hopefully when the on-field results are there, you can go ahead and close the deal. All right, we'll take a break, come back. We are live downtown at the Fairmont Hotel for the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area for their 2021 Great Futures Summer Lunch. And Steve Sarkisian will be in the house here a little bit later as the keynote speaker. Roger Wallace is the MC. We'll take a break, come back. Our first Longhorn Notebook of the day. We'll re-rack the Reuben Owens story and talk about why I think we need to start looking at Sark's time at Alabama in a little bit of a different light than you'd look at a normal assistant coach to head coach coaching transition. We'll do that when we come back. All Night the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital. Rolling along, hour number one, Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel back in the Horn studios down here at the Fairmont Hotel. We got the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area. Their 2021 Great Future Summer Luncheon. Steve Sarkisian is the keynote speaker. He will be here in a little bit. Roger Wallace is the MC for this event. Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Before we get to the Longhorn Notebook for this hour, I've got to mention out here, Derek Cohen, Trevor Hines, the Horn staff, helping us get set up today. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. We're live on Twitch because of these guys. And Trevor, that's a nice coat you got on today, sir. Looking quite stylish. Derek, we couldn't get you to wear a button-down, but that's okay. That's, you know, I had to wear a button-down shirt for this thing. I thought everybody did.
But the quarter buttons, though. Well, we're almost there.
That's a very stylish Longhorn polo you have on today. But no, we're thrilled to be down here. You know, the vibe is it's lively down here. This is the first remote for Light the Tower since we launched on March 4th of last year. So I, you know, kind of wish Craig and Snoop were down here, but Craig's got business to tend to in Omaha. Snoop's got to make sure we stay on the air back at the Horn Studios.
Yes.
But Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Austin doing some outstanding work. During the 2019 to 2020 school year, club members had a graduation rate of 96%. 97% of club teens expect to graduate from high school, and 86% expect to complete post-secondary education. They've awarded over $7 million in scholarships over the last 5 years. Really important, too, over 700,000 meals and snacks provided to club members in 2020. They've got over 9,000 registered members. And talking to some of the staff members around here, they're excited. They're excited to be back and out in front of the community and boots on the ground. And this is one of the first on this, you know, summer luncheon circuit. This is kind of one of the first big events down here at the Fairmont. And we are thrilled at the Horn to be a part of it, specifically our Light the Tower program. Let's get back to Texas football. Again, big news of the day, Reuben Owens, 5-star running back, the number 2 ranked running back prospect in the country in the class of 2023, decommitted from Texas this morning. His father told Steve Wiltfong of 24/7 Sports that Texas is still the leader, but Alabama, Texas A&M, Georgia, LSU, Ohio State, Oklahoma, those schools are in the mix. He's got a visit upcoming to USC as well. So if anything else pops up on the Reuben Owens situation, we will update you on that and, of course, re-rack that throughout the program for those that might have missed it. But right now, let's go ahead and get to the first Longhorn Notebook of the day.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
Boy, my interstitial sounding strong there on remote, Snoop. Thank you for that. Back at the studio. So I mentioned this earlier. Dennis Dodd at CBS Sports, and I got to keep it in the Viacom CBS family. But Dennis does great work, and this is just an outstanding piece. So he's doing a three-part series, a multi-part series, kind of looking at Nick Saban. It is his coaching tree, but it's really looking more at kind of this coaching car wash that he's had the last few years, where guys that maybe they got fired from a job, maybe things just ended unsavory, maybe they just need to kind of reinvent themselves. You know, they go spend a couple of years with Nick Saban, they get polished up, and then they go and take head coaching jobs elsewhere. We saw it with Lane Kiffin, we saw it with Mike Locksley, we've seen it with Butch Jones, who's now back in the game as a head coach, and now we're seeing it with Steve Sarkisian at Texas. And Dennis Dodd yesterday had a really good story at CBS Sports where Sark went through kind of some of the nitty-gritty in terms of his time at Alabama. I love this piece because, yes, it gets into kind of how Nick Saban, kind of the Alabama model that everybody wants to try to create given how successful it's been. But I also think it's fascinating to look at Sark as a play caller and how much he helped Alabama during his 2 years there as the offensive coordinator and the play caller. And, you know, even tuning in via Zoom to some of the press conferences leading up to the college football playoff national championship game where Alabama beat Ohio State, and even coming out of the game, whether it was Nick Saban or Mac Jones or Devontae Smith or Najee Harris, they talked about just how much Sark had helped take that offense to the next level. And I'll just read from, you know, the Dennis Dodd piece here. He said, talking about Sark, said his adaptability is part of what has allowed Sark to be an offensive assistant for two Heisman winners, Reggie Bush at USC, Devontae Smith at Alabama. It's what's allowed him to rehabilitate himself in his image when Saban threw him a lifeline. And it made Sarkisian the best play caller in college football in 2020. And one of the best in the game's history. He was named Broyles Award winner last year as the nation's best assistant coach. This is the part that I think if you're a Texas fan should really excite you, and just in terms of what Sark's offense brings to the table. And again, what we saw in the spring game was a really kind of bland, vanilla version of what we're going to see come the fall. It was really a pared down. There's no reason to show much of anything in a spring game. But this is a taste of what you're going to see. Again, this is from Dennis Dodd's story at CBS Sports. In reviewing film for the 2020 Iron Bowl, former Auburn defensive coordinator Kevin Steele spotted more than 240 shifts and motions by Alabama during the season. That's a snapshot of why Sarkisian had been named acting coach at Alabama after Saban was sidelined with COVID-19. Think about that. 240 motions and shifts throughout a regular season going into the Iron Bowl. And I think that's part of what – it's not that I don't think Texas fans should worry about the quarterback situation because, you know, really until Sam Ellinger in this post-Colt McCoy era that this program has been in, man, finding a quarterback to take over and take control of this offense and be a guy that you could rely on week in and week out – that was a task much easier said than done. Like I said, until Sam Ellinger really took hold of the job. And even then, as good as Sam Ellinger was, we saw at points late into 2019 and throughout 2020 where it felt like the offense had kind of reverted to, well, just put the ball in 11's hands and he'll make something happen and you'll have a chance to go win a game. That's not how Steve Sarkisian is going to do that. It's going to be much more geared to allowing the quarterback to get the ball out of his hands quick, get the ball to guys in space, get your skill guys on the move, put them in different positions. And I go back to that question I asked Sark during the spring about just the rigidity within the receiver roles, because again, we saw that so often during Tom Herman's tenure. And it just blew me away, like how just the reluctancy to go back to it. Like I think back to the Big 12 championship game against Oklahoma, and Texas comes out on that first series in that Big 12 championship game. If you go back and watch that film, go look at what they did with Colin Johnson on that first drive. They've got him in the slot. They've got him as the number two in a 3-by-1. They're moving him all over the place. And that guy at his size with his skill set to move him around was a matchup nightmare. Go watch Alabama last year and look at how much I couldn't tell you exactly what position Devontae Smith was labeled at on the Alabama depth chart. I think they listed him as an X receiver. But if you go watch Alabama, go look at how many different places Devontae Smith lined up on the field. He's into the boundary. He's in the field side. He's in the slot. He's in the backfield. He's doing jet motions. He's doing kind of half orbit motion, then going back out. They're giving him the ball on some speed sweep action, doing a whole lot of different things to get your best player, your Heisman winner, to get the football in his hands. I'm talking about it all the time with Najee Harris. This is a guy that had 200-plus carries and managed to catch 30 or 40 balls. So it's about getting the ball in your playmaker's hands, number one, yes, but number two, doing it in a diverse number of ways so that the defense can't catch on to what you're doing. And, you know, that's another thing with Tom Herman. And the reason why it's frustrating is because you look at the body of work, the overall productivity of the Texas offense under Tom Herman. The offense did get better. It got more productive. Go look at some of the numbers last year. What are they talking about? Scoring offense, yards per play, yards per carry. Texas was one of the better offenses in the Big 12 and in some statistical areas, one of the better offenses in the country. But what you're banking on with Steve Sarkisian, especially when we talk about these motions and shifts, you're banking on now when you play a team like an Oklahoma or coming up when you've got Alabama on the schedule in a couple of years or when you've got an Ohio State or a Michigan or even a team like Iowa State, who we know that's a different animal. Matt Campbell's built that in a different way. But when, you know, you're going to Ames and you know you're going to take on a tough opponent, when things even out and you've got to have that schematic advantage, you've got to have that week in and week out. Because if you don't in this league, the coaches you're facing, the Matt Campbells of the world and the Lincoln Rileys of the world, and even guys that are coordinators, Doug Meacham at TCU, with Sonny Cumbie at Texas Tech, a Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State, the offensive minds in this league are so good that you're going to have to just go into every week understanding that you need to go win that chess match. That's something that didn't happen all the time with Texas under Tom Herman, but with Steve Sarkisian and what he was able to do with Alabama, it makes you feel differently about Texas now having that schematic advantage more often than not when they step on the field. I say this all the time about Texas. This isn't, you know, 2001 to like 2005 with Mack Brown and Greg Davis, where you just had so much more talent, an infinite more amount of talent than maybe one or maybe two opponents you had on the schedule, that it didn't matter what you did. You could just roll the ball out there, and you're going to score 40 points just because. That's not the way college football works in the year 2021. And I think Sark understands that. He understands that from what he did at Alabama, which, as we know now, in the SEC, you know, when Kevin Sumlin got to A&M with Johnny Manziel and they started running spread and Hugh Freeze was doing a little bit of it at Ole Miss, there were only a handful of teams in the SEC that were doing that. Anybody watch an SEC game last year? The overwhelming majority of teams in that league now are running some form of space and pace spread offense, running some form of tempo. It's taken over the league because somebody in the SEC finally realized, hey, you know, with the athletes we recruit, if we just stop playing football in a phone booth, maybe we can put an exciting brand of football on the field. Maybe we can score some points. Maybe we can pile up some yards. And isn't it funny now that if you see a Big 12 game a couple of years ago that was like a 56-63 game, oh, there's no defense being played. But do that in the SEC, and, oh, this is great offense. This is dynamic offense. We've never seen anything like this. No, we've – those of us who watch Big 12 football, we've been watching it for a decade plus now, and there actually is good football played in the Big 12, but I digress. But look at Sark's time at Alabama, and yes, there's the schematic part of it, but look at overall just kind of how he reinvented himself and came out clean on the other side from the Nick Saban car wash and was ready to take over the Texas program. And that's why I think we've got to look at it, and there is the statistic that no Nick Saban assistant coach has ever beat him in a game. And that's going to change at some point. When you look at, you know, Kirby Smart, the talent Georgia has, you feel like either Georgia's going to break through at some point or it's going to be a coach other than Kirby Smart that does it. And you look at the way Jimbo Fisher's recruiting at Texas A&M and you feel like, okay, they do play Alabama every year. You feel like maybe on one of those years in College Station where you've got kind of the stars aligned, so to say, you're going to be able to knock off Alabama. And because Texas A&M is bringing in a lot of talent. So that statistic is going to come to an end at some point, law of averages tell you. But when you talk about Nick Saban assistants, you've got to look at this run of assistants differently. And we actually had – this was before I knew the Dennis Dodd stuff was coming up. We talked about this on Longhorn Blitz this week, and Rod brought it up, and we elaborated on it. You know, one of the problems, like, with the Bill Belichick coaching tree, Like, there's this reputation now that Belichick assistants, they get NFL jobs, and it just doesn't work. I mean, you can name more Belichick flameouts in the NFL than you can find successes. You know, Matt Patricia, Charlie Weiss, just go down the line of guys that just haven't panned out off of that Belichick tree. It's because Belichick doesn't really share a lot of information on how he does stuff. That's why the one guy in the Belichick tree who I'm fascinated to see what happens is Josh McDaniels, because clearly Josh McDaniels was in that boat of had a lot of success, ended up moving on, took a job, it didn't work out, but Josh McDaniels ended up coming back. So if he's there for a while, I want to know, is he there long enough that Bill Belichick just feels compelled to just, okay, I guess he's been around here long enough, just go ahead and just let him behind the curtain a little bit. Belichick doesn't do that. And it's really interesting because Belichick is from the Bill Parcells tree, and Parcells shared a lot with his assistant coaches and was pretty open with information. The other coaching tree that fascinates me is the Bill Walsh coaching tree, because Bill Walsh himself, the late Bill Walsh, was an open book. He wrote a book on football, maybe the definitive coaching book, Finding the Winning Edge. It's really hard to find. If you can find it, grab a copy. But I think last I checked, they're going for several $100s on Amazon. You just can't find them. But Bill Walsh was literally an open book. And you look at guys that have come off of his coaching tree, Mike Shanahan, Mike Holmgren, Andy Reid, John Gruden. Those guys talk openly and freely about how they do things. And in a roundabout way, Steve Sarkisian does have a tie to the Bill Walsh tree by way of Pete Carroll, by way of George Seifert. And one of the stories Sark tells that I really love, he talks about being at a breakfast. It's him, Pete Carroll, and Bill Walsh. And Bill Walsh is just an open book and sharing things on what he looks for in a quarterback and how to evaluate quarterbacks, and who better to get knowledge from about evaluating and what you're looking for at the most important position on the field than the guy who might have been better than anybody in the history of football at doing it. But I say all that to say this. So you take all that into consideration. So Nick Saban, there are assistant coaches that were with him for so long that he had to share information. But in this iteration of it, when you look at the guys that are coming through that car wash, they're not there long enough to be able to gain an extreme amount of knowledge from Nick Saban. So I think, you know, when we talk about coaching trees and talk about successes, we talk about what guys learn from certain coaches. I think we've got to look at this Nick Saban car wash from a different light again, because guys just aren't there long enough to be able to gain a ton of knowledge. So I think it really comes down to how much of a sponge you can be, how quickly can you absorb knowledge, and how much knowledge can you absorb in the relatively short amount of time that you're with Nick Saban. Because the way this situation is geared, yes, guys aren't there for a long time, but you're not geared to be there for a long time. It's almost like when you're in an internship and that internship has an expiration date, and then you're either going to get hired or essentially you're going to get fired because you're just not fit for the job. That's basically what this Nick Saban car wash is. Either in a couple of years, you're either going to go on and be a head coach somewhere, or you probably need to just go get out of that organization and go do something else because it's just not working out. And so far, the success stories have been guys that have gotten jobs. But as we track Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, and we track Butch Jones, and we track Mike Locksley at Maryland, and we track Sark, you have to look at those. It's almost like the Nick Saban coaching tree version 2.0. You've just got to look at it in a different light. And how good of a sponge was Sark in terms of learning that Alabama model in the limited amount of time that he was with Nick Saban? It's going to be a fascinating study. And then most likely in a year or two when they're done with their time with Nick Saban, whatever's next for Bill O'Brien, whatever's next for Doug Marrone, whether that's a college job, both those guys have been college head coaches in the last decade. If they go back to the college game or they go back to the program, whatever's next, tracking those guys to see how much did they soak up in a relatively short amount of time. So I'm fascinated to see how it works. We do know clearly there is enough evidence and enough on-the-record stuff to tell you that Sark did play an extremely pivotal role in helping Alabama win a national championship. And now can he take what he learned at Alabama, his experiences at Washington, at USC, both as a head coach and an assistant coach under Pete Carroll, and bring all this together and get Texas back to the point where a lot of people expect this program to be on a year-in, year-out basis? It's going to be fascinating to watch. We'll take a break, come back. Inconceivable is next on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
the long.
That's what you think it is.
Inconceivable means it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and the fine folks at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. If you or your athlete have suffered an injury that requires orthopedic attention, visit austin-orthopedics.com. Let Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his team get you back in the game, not just on the court or on the field. Get you back in the game of life. Get you feeling really good at Austin Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. austin-orthopedics.com. So I'm going to need Police Chief Cantu, and I know we've got a few folks in law enforcement who text the show, because there's a rising crime going on, Derek, in our area. And I don't know if I'm opening this up to you, Trevor, whoever wants to comment, Snoop, you as well, that kind of hit close to home, and it's an interesting crime. Have you guys been keeping up with catalytic converter theft?
No.
Okay. So apparently... Snoop, are you aware of catalytic converter theft being an issue?
Yeah, well, I've heard of it.
Okay. So basically, catalytic converter, your car can run without, but basically, and I'm dumbing this down and maybe dumbing it down so I can understand it, so if I've got it wrong, please, 337-3776, text the show and correct me. But basically, the catalytic converter, it processes the fuels that go through your exhaust system to basically lower emissions, right? But the thing with catalytic converters is there are metals in there. I think platinum is one, palladium is another, that they go for like $2,500, $3,000 an ounce. So basically, if you've got, and most of it happens to higher sitting like SUVs and trucks, if you've got one, people are just getting under there with like saws and sawing off the catalytic converters and taking them around
to get the platinum and all the stuff that
yeah,
comes
they're taking
in
them
that?
To like catalytic converter recycling plants and getting the money for the metals. This happened to my brother while he was at work. Somebody was in the work parking lot, and now the other problem is, thankfully, with his car insurance, he can just kind of pay the deductible and get it fixed. If he didn't have insurance for his truck, it would be like somewhere between, I think they told him, like $3,600 job out of pocket to get this thing fixed. What? So this is a major problem. So this is a story I found. I found this. This was courtesy of KXAN. This was back in April. So this is April 23rd. So we're, I don't know. I was told Math would not be involved in the show today, however many months we are removed from this now. But the department's commercial burglary unit investigated 27 cases of catalytic converter thefts in 2019. Then last year, so for 2020, cases skyrocketed to 584 thefts reported. The latest Chiefs Monthly report from March shows similar figures citywide so far. There's been an increase of 209% in thefts of auto parts this year compared to last. So, Derek, you haven't heard of this at all.
No, I had no clue what you said before what a catalytic converter even is.
And, Snoop, you have heard of it. So I've heard this is getting so bad that... there are car dealerships in Dallas is one major metro area I've heard that people are going in after hours and basically cutting the catalytic converters off of like brand new vehicles, which is also a problem because of the pandemic. And a lot of this goes back to Snoop, one of our favorite stories on here, that Suez, the boat that got stuck in the Suez Canal. So we've got this massive disruption in supply chains that car dealerships are already having an issue keeping new inventory stocked, on top of the fact that now you're having to send them in for work replacing stolen catalytic converters. Catalytic converter theft is just creating a massive headache for car owners, dealers, everybody out there in the automotive community.
So the catalytic converter has to be in a pretty easily accessible place of the vehicle for this to happen?
Yeah, I guess.
Or is he getting like on his hands and knees underneath the car trying to cut a wire?
Well, that's why it's got to be higher sitting trucks or SUVs, because you can't like, look, if you're out there with like a floor jack, you know, you're going to get caught. So you've got to have the right body type, the right set of skills, if you will. And the car, the vehicle's got to be sitting up high enough that you can get in there and work your magic. But yeah.
We just need to go back to radios.
Oh, Snoop, somebody taking a shot at you on the text line. See, Snoop is from they said Snoop is from DeSoto. Yes, he knows what catalytic converter theft is.
Come on now.
It got hood after I left.
Be nice to Snoop. He's a gentle soul. and we don't like to attack him on the text line. Snoop is already nervous about viewing the text line anyway, so let's just make it easier on Snoop. So, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so I didn't think I would have a story. I've heard about this problem. I didn't think I would have a story about catalytic converter theft until my brother sent me a picture. I was like, hey, guess what happened to me today? I'm like, huh. So he's taking the next step when this gets fixed. No joke. So there are people building, like, welding. There are cages you can weld to your truck or your vehicle now to make it impossible to steal the catalytic converter.
Like a lockbox around the catalytic converter?
Kind of, in a way, yeah. So that's basically like what my brother's going to do whenever he gets it back. We'll lighten it up here. We've got one more for Inconceivable today. Snoop, we love animal stories here on the show.
Yes.
And this is an animal attack of sorts. This is about a bear tearing up a car, but it's what the bear left behind in the state of Colorado that's got a lot of people. It's really kind of the inconceivable part of the story. Snoop, a case of beer in the back seat may have been the enticement for a bear that got itself trapped inside a car in Douglas County, Colorado, for at least an hour on Tuesday, according to a report. A Colorado Parks and Wildlife officer and a sheriff's deputy eventually managed to safely remove the animal, District Wildlife Manager Casey Westbrook told Fox 31 in Denver. Quote, he was just doing what they do, which is kind of pinballing around here, trying to figure his way out. The bear had reportedly gotten into the unlocked car and couldn't figure out how to get out. He shredded part of the door and the ceiling trying to get out. There was also a case of beer in the car that got slightly banged up, but none of the cans appear to have been open, the report said. So, I don't know. Maybe this bear just saw a case of beer and it's a hot day and wanted to quench his thirst and ended up getting stuck in a car. So, Derek, we were talking about being in the state of Colorado during the break. So you venture up there quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Is the bear attack something that you have to constantly be mindful of?
No,
Colorado.
When I was there, it was more of the cougars, the pumas,
mountain
lions.
Pumas?
Yeah.
Well, like Lance Berkman hanging out in the woods or what?
It was more mountain lions. Yeah. But we had a lot of bears get into campus, and we get alerts whenever there was a bear on campus or it was in a tree, and then they'd have to get a dart and tranquilize it and get it out of there. But
well, at least you didn't do what they did. You heard about the bear that apparently got loose in Norman, and they didn't, like, tranquilize it and, you know, repurpose the bear, move him elsewhere. They just shot the bear.
I missed this story.
Yeah, well, this is in the state of Oklahoma where they also issue permits so you can hunt Sasquatches.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. It's par for the course north of the Red River. So the reason why I ask if bear attacks are real, because apparently between 2019 and 2020 in the state of Colorado, nearly 500 car break-ins by bears were reported.
I can see that happening.
So I guess if you're living in Colorado, we talk about welding cages around your catalytic converter down here. I don't know if can you bear-proof a car?
Keep bear spray in it?
I guess. I don't know. So
you could do something.
I'm going to go with the bear saw the case of beer and got thirsty and then ended up inadvertently getting himself stuck in the car. So that just sounds a lot more interesting than just bear getting locked in the car. All right. That's going to do it for hour number one. That's going to do it for Inconceivable. We'll come back. We are down here live at the Fairmont Hotel in Austin. We are down here excited to partner with the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Austin area for the 2021 Great Future Summer Luncheon. Texas head football coach Steve Sarkisian, the keynote speaker at this year's event. That's coming up here in just a little bit, and we will roll along. Hour number two, Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.